And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
How you doing, Dan?
Good. How are you? Glad to have you back.
Good. Yeah, I just got back from VS Live in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. That would have been fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
They didn't invite me. Did you happen to see Brian Peake?
Awkward. You know, I knew he was going to be there.
Friend?
I never ran into Giovanni's friend, unfortunately. So, Okay. Yeah, we should have made it a better point to hang out, but I was kind of, you know, quick trip.
So let's just jump right into it.
Let's do that.
One thing, our MSN profile integration is now up. So
into Channel 9.
Duncan and team have been working on this for Channel 9, and the idea is you have a unified view with an MSN profile. So whether that's forums, whether that's your specific profile data or Visual Studio achievements, there's a unified view on MCN profile.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I like how they pulled together all that data. So you just get this when you mouse over is the idea.
Yeah, and you also get it when you go into a user's profile, but the nice thing is you get it as you move on the page.
Cool. One profile to rule them all. Nice. So this is a really good blog post by Soma Segar. He's our vice president of the developer division and server and tools business. And he talks about all the improvements that you get in .NET 4.5 around cloud and server applications. So There's obviously been a lot of focus on Windows 8 and kind of Azure as a core platform. But here he goes into some of the specific things that .NET 4.5 gives you. This includes enhancements to scalability, which you kind of get in every release. A lot of changes, obviously, in ASP.NET, WCF, there's web APIs. What else? Just a lot of good...
Data Entity Framework.
Entity Framework 5 is in this release. There's a lot of core stuff that's included within the base class library that of course, we always approve with every release. And I think I've mentioned this in the past, but when you install .NET 4.5 on a machine, it actually is a full upgrade for .NET 4. So you'll no longer have a .NET 4 installed on the machine. It will effectively just be a new version that should be backwards compatible with all your .NET 4 apps.
Great.
Cool. So next up, we have Jason Zander talking about tooling for JavaScript.
Yeah, so a lot of people probably don't even know all the different tooling improvements. And this is really IDE features for a developer that's building a Windows Metro application for JavaScript. So if you think about a JavaScript developer for Windows Metro-style applications, I mean, just the fact that they figured out IntelliSense, you think about IntelliSense, they need to support third-party libraries, be able to do jQuery where, you know, you're typically doing $, which is just a shorthand for jQuery dot. Mm-hmm. They need to be able to support all the DOM things. So you're working in, you know, document, all, get a specific tag, blah, blah, blah. They also need to be able to do all the WinRT calls, right? So you can directly within JavaScript code know within the WinRT system for, say, you know, doing a search contract or whatever the application happens to be using from in terms of the WinRT APIs. So a number of the things that they want to do to provide a really good experience there, including XML documents, XML doc stuff, so you can actually get IntelliSense
right
in the JavaScript IntelliSense experience. And then some of the other stuff for when you're debugging applications, so that they have a DOM explorer. And the idea behind a DOM explorer is that I can actually see, get a view of the DOM as my application is running.
Mm-hmm. And be able to... Document object model.
Yes, document object model. Visual Studio, not VS. So I'm looking at a specific element, right? And that element has, you know, a tag, has a specific ID.
Yep.
I can see all the different CSS styles that are applied to it and why. So it's really nice in terms of, hey, why is this going in and it's inheriting this? And you can actually see some of the data there. And probably one of my favorite features that we're so used to is the ability to have a live coding experience where I can say, you know, walk up to something, add a specific element. I can then add different attributes to that element.
You mean like edit and continue? Is that what you're talking about?
Probably more like immediate mode.
Oh,
the
okay.
REPL where you're basically putting stuff in, evaluating as it goes in, and actually printing it out to the screen.
Mm.
Right. So it's that sort of like, let me try this. Let me try one method.
Yep.
You know? I have some sort of attribute that's a true or false, you know, visibility or something. and be able to see live if it's true or not, or be able to set that property.
That's how I code. I call it the 40 monkeys on typewriters approach, where eventually if I just keep making changes, things will work exactly the way I want them to.
But a lot of people like that, especially when, say, either you're debugging or whatever, it's that sort of iterative approach. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't even know that that exists, so it's definitely cool stuff. So I love posts like this where you get to kind of discover new IDE features.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, this is the set of features that's for Metro-style applications, not necessarily your regular web apps that are using JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. So this is cool, though. If you're somebody who likes extensions for Visual Studio, you should check out the fact that we just released the Visual Studio 11 beta SDK. So that team's great. They're always continuing to expand the numbers of ways in which you can add in to or extend Visual Studio. So that's cool. And then here's the ASP.NET Web API. Dan?
Yeah, so the idea behind this is with the API Explorer, is you can walk up to an MVC app and that's using ASP.NET Web API and actually have it spit out what a representation of your API is. So if you can see in that right-hand corner, this is the result of running it after on, say, your local host, where you have localhost/API. Then you have two controllers, users and values, and different ways to get at value where they pass in the ID. The ID, you know, is passed in and evaluated. And the idea behind it is it gives you, there's a second part coming on this to give more detail on how users can actually build descriptive APIs. But you're doing this dynamically.
Yeah,
right?
So this is
based on, it's looking at the structure of your API, mm-hmm. structure of your controllers, then the parameters that it's taking in.
So when you do this, you're doing it on an application that you have source for? Is that right?
Yeah,
It's not just predicting based on a REST pattern or something like that what
no,
your APIs
no,
are.
Exactly. Okay, You're running this on your application, basically, on my current configuration.
Got it. And so primarily, is this so you can get documentation out about your API?
Absolutely. Okay. So like I am building my documentation pages, but I want to build them dynamically based on what my current value of my API is.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So next up, we have an article that was on the Windows 8 blog that talks about being productive when your app is off screen, which I actually thought this was going to be focused on users and how you can continue to like do charms and sharing and that kind of thing. So his use of the term productive kind of threw me for a loop there. But really, what he's talking about here is what goes on with your application when you're doing other things with other off-screen applications. So we were talking about this the other day, Dan, where you know, if I am in the middle of you know, updating a data grid on my application, and then I suspend that application by switching to another application, does the tree, the forest fall, make any noise kind of thing? Mm-hmm. Is that data grid continuing to update in the background? And then obviously, you know, some things go to sleep and kind of suspend while they're not on screen. Other things do keep running and run in the background, like being able to play music and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And then some other things may happen with a different level of frequency. So in order to optimize for battery life, for example, one of the things that that Windows does is it tries to queue up tasks that require the radio stack so that they're all batched at the same time. So
right,
as an app developer, it's really important for you to understand how those things go, what happens when your app's running off screen so that you can build your applications to take the best advantage.
Notifications,
of that.
Live tiles, there's just a lot to think about for
your
application.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the first post I've seen that does a really good job of rolling up the state of the art there.
Sweet. So Windows 8 Camp in a Box Consumer Preview Edition. So for those of you who don't know, I think it's devcamps.ms.
That's right.
We're doing tons of Windows 8 events, and the idea behind these is one, they're local, so mm-hmm. you can go to them, there's, you know, try and find nearby events and really show you how to build applications.
Yeah.
Right. So
I think most of them are one day, they're kind of targeted. There's events for Azure, for Windows 8, for Windows Phone, and one more that I think just a general web camp as well. But this one that we're talking about is the Windows 8 camp.
Exactly. And with this, if you are a developer and you can attend one of the camps, but you want to be able to see the content, for example, one of the key things that I really like is the hands-on labs. Mm. So you go through, say, the Contoso cookbook and actually do step-by-step how you actually build an app and add certain parts of an application.
Right.
So.
Or maybe you're a user group leader and you want to redeliver this for your user group. It's another great way for you to kind of spin up your own event. So lots of options here.
And it's devcamps.ms/windows.
Right. That's right. Or if you just go to devcamps.ms, you'll see all the camps that we offer. So what's this, Dan? Array visualization?
I'm a big proponent of Visualizer. So mm-hmm. this is a free open source extension for Visual Studio, and people have probably used Visualizers before. So if you've seen the XML Visualizer mm-hmm. or the HTML Visualizer, I have a string, maybe it's a text, maybe it's a XDoc, whatever it happens to be. It
a byte array that represents a picture, for example.
Yeah, so yep. There's an image visualizer. The idea behind this is to actually give you a way to visualize arrays within your application.
That's awesome.
So I love it. It actually does, I think, triple or multiple dimension. I think I saw three-dimensional.
Up to 4D arrays.
I don't even understand 4D arrays.
Well, it's like multiple 3D arrays within their own kind of linear grid, right?
I'm not sure.
It blows my mind.
It blows my mind.
And then, like, over time, they change as well, which introduces a fifth dimension, really.
Right. So,
but I love this. This is great.
Yeah. So, the other cool part is for people who are looking to do visualizers, mm-hmm. it's a great example of how you can do sort of custom visualizations of data.
So the source is available too, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so I think that's probably one of the coolest parts. I think we need better graph visualization tools where I'm mm-hmm. seeing nodes and things in a general purpose way.
Yeah.
But this is definitely cool.
Cool. It's great. Microsoft Research Face SDK. What's this all about?
So the Face SDK, what it allows you to do is actually, and maybe you can see the picture where it's taking that and actually processing the image and detecting where faces are. So it can do a number of things, right? So it's actually detecting where things faces are, the alignment, and actually tracking. So some people have done stuff like this before, where because it's tracking, I can now do an image mm-hmm. and have it say move around,
right, or map it onto a 3D model or something like that.
Yeah. So I mean, that's probably somewhat hard, but yeah. It's and the point is, you know, it's available as an SDK, so for people that are looking to build applications, not Facebook, it's just a face tracking SDK.
Oh, got it. Yep.
So, yeah.
Cool. Pixar Studio. So this is my pick of the week.
Pick of the week.
And this one might be a little bit old to some people. I think it first came out about a year ago, but it's new to me. And the story is about how when Pixar was building Toy Story 2, they actually had this moment where they almost lost the entire movie, which represented something like 20 to 30 man years worth of work. And so it's the story of them saying, okay, you know, we can go to our backup. But the backup didn't work. And they have this whole story, which is actually really cute, about how they were able to actually get the server from someone who had an offline copy. Well, I don't want to ruin the story. You should watch it. It's a 3-minute video. A really great story, and it's animated. But I think it's just a nice reminder that we all kind of assume, yeah, the backup's there to catch everything, and so we just assume that that's the safety
net. What if the backup is corrupted?
What if the backup fails? And so this, my brother, actually, who's been on the show before, Dan, he has all these
no
stories
relation.
As well. No relation. So yes, relation to me, but not to you. He has all these stories because he did ops for many, many years about how he accidentally did exactly this, where he ran rm star against a directory and it started deleting everything. And he goes, "Oh man, this is." Anyway, check out the video. It's a really good story.
Nice. So my pick of the week is BattleBots. These are BattleBots with dumbbots.net. So. The idea behind this is it's actually an application you run, and it reminds me of an app we had done before on Coding for Fun where I think it was Unreal Tournament Bots, where you can actually code the behavior for them in .NET. And this was, Andy Sterling, mm-hmm. James Lisiak, who had done it for Rob Miles' class. But they had competitions where people build bots and they saw who was actually winning in the arena. Mm. So it's definitely a lot of fun. This is obviously a lot easier because you can download the app. You don't have to install that specific version of Unreal Tournament and everything. And the code is running right in there. So you can do things like, you know, basically on my tick, where it's my event, I'm now handling. I can see what's going on, what my health is, am I seeing enemies, that sort of thing.
Cool.
So it's definitely a lot of fun, and I think this is a good example of areas where I think people would be interested in getting into programming. Mm-hmm. For the fun part.
AI programming is awesome. I wish I had more time to go spend on that.
Cool.
So we will see you next week.
Thanks.